Hello and welcome to the Anti-Football Podcast. My name is Chris. For the first time in about a month, I am joined by Harry. And a lot has gotten down in this past month, you know. Lionel Messi, he's trying to force his way out of Barcelona. Looking like, you know, he might stay or he might go to Manchester City. You know, Thiago Alcantara, that whole transfer saga is still going on, as is Jadon Sancho's, you know. Chelsea are continuing to spend money and Spurs signed Joe Hart. So it's all going down. And I thought we'll just do, you know, a little bit of a season preview. What do you think overall in this season, Harry? What do you think this season's going to be? Are you excited?
Oh, we'll be if Messi comes to England, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think if Messi comes, we should just automatically promote Stoke. So we could finally answer the question, could Messi do it on a cold, rainy Tuesday night at Stoke?
Agreed, yeah.
Yeah. We're going to do a bit of a season preview just before the start of the season. Obviously, you know, we're recording this on the 4th of September. Obviously, as it stands, Messi hasn't come. Neither is the likes of Jadon Sancho or anything. We're still about 4 or 5 weeks out from the end of the transfer window, and we're about a week out from the start of the season. So, you know, things could change, you know, in a matter of days with the way this market is. But we're just going to go through some categories and who we think, you know, best fits the bill. And we're going to start with the surprise of the season. We'll go for a team and a player, but we'll start off with the team. So this is the team who you think will perform better than the consensus deems them. So I'll let you start, Harry. Who do you think will be the surprise package of the season?
I have gone with Everton. I think the dealings that they're doing in the transfer market is going to be a big reason for that. And hopefully we start to see that Carlo Ancelotti really stamps his authority into the Everton team and in the Premier League again. The likes of James Rodriguez, Alan and Abdoulaye Doucouré is going to really sort out that midfield, which has been really troublesome for them in the past few seasons, and should see them not rely as much on the likes of Calvert-Lewin, Richarlison and Digne, even though Digne was not at his best compared to the previous season where he was part of the team of the year, I believe, in the Premier League.
That midfield was definitely a situation that needed sorting out for Everton. You know, you've got the likes of you know, Morgan Schneiderlin and, what's his name? Gylfi Sigurdsson. You know, they're just...
He was good. It's just he had no legs last season.
Yeah, I mean, he's completely tailed off as Gylfi Sigurdsson. I mean, he's in his 30s, so, you know, you can't be relying on him, you know, like that. And, you know, and Barman as well, he was unlucky with injuries. Same with Andre Gomez. So, and Tom Davis, you know, that's not really right. To be honest with you. Yeah. So Everton have, you know, lacked a spine of the team basically for the majority of last season. So, you know, if you bring in the likes of Abdoulaye Doucouré, Alan, James Rodriguez, you know, that's really going to shore up that midfield and provide a lot of creativity to Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison. I know Carlo Ancelotti definitely has high hopes for Richarlison. I believe, you know, about a month back or something, he said, you know, he's expecting Richarlison to score 30 goals this season, which, you know, is absolutely ludicrous. Of course it is. But it just shows how high regarded Richarlison is for Ancelotti. So I feel like it's definitely going to be a make or break season for him. He came from Watford for about £50 million. So he's definitely got to step up to try and make sure that that transfer fee is justified.
I think he did it last season. He justified it.
He had a decent little season. But if you are paying £50 million for a forward, you know, I think, what did he get? Like 13 goals?
Yeah, but you got to remember, we've mentioned that the midfield crap, so the service for him is going to be absolutely dreadful. So he did the best of what of a bad situation.
Yeah, and he has made a fruitful partnership up front with Calvert-Lewin. You know, Ancelotti playing quite a lot of the season with a 4-4-2, whether that's down to the lack of a spine or that's his genuine wanting tactic going forward. I doubt it is, considering he's signed James Rodriguez as a number 10. But if he does go forward with the 4-4-2, Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin are a really good partnership up front together. They seem to have a good understanding of each other. And you've got Moise Keane on the bench as well, who, you know, it hasn't really worked out for him. You know, obviously, he was linked with the likes of Arsenal, the likes of Valencia. I believe Barcelona as well were in for him. But he went to Everton because he wanted more game time in the Premier League, and obviously that hasn't worked out for him. Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin have been above him in the pecking order. And he's had some pretty, you know, horrible moments during the season. Obviously, the one that sticks most in my mind is the Duncan Ferguson incident, where he brought him on in like the 60th minute and took him off 20 minutes later. You know, what's that going to do to a 20-year-old, you know, confidence who will barely speak the language, you know, in front of, you know, 60,000 away fans or however many it was? Like, you know, that's just going to absolutely ruin him. So hopefully he does pick himself up this second season. And yet, with the retirement of Leighton Baines, I feel like Lucas Digne is going to be relied upon a little bit more, mainly because there's no backup. I know they did sign a young kid, Everton, but he's not going to go into the first team. But yet, the only issue I have with this Everton team is, you know, that defence. You know, I like Yerry Mina. I feel like he is a good player. And you know, Michael Keane on his day is a really good defender. But, you know, for the level that Everton want to be, which is really, you know, where like Wolves are and Leicester are, which is, you know, pushing into that top six, you know, is that defence good enough? I wouldn't say so, especially with John Pickford behind him. You know, he had a torrid season last season. And I feel like with those midfielders, you know, being more or less confirmed and being brought in, I feel like goalkeeper's the next most important priority for Ancelotti.
Yeah, and, well, I'd also say their defence, because they've lost Baines and they've lost Sidibe.
Oh, yeah, Sidibe was only on loan, wasn't he? I'd be surprised if there wasn't some sort of clause if they wanted to bring Sidibe back. You know, and it was good from what I saw of him, Sidibe, you know, because he could play on the wing as well, which was something that we saw a lot from him, you know. With the likes of Theo Walcott not exactly performing up to par for where Everton are wanting to be. So I'd be bringing Jules Sidibe back, but if he's not brought back, like you said, that could be another position where they need to improve. I mean, Seamus Coleman's getting on a bit, isn't he? I mean, he must be what? Like, he's definitely in his 30s. Like,
yeah.
I won't be able to tell you exactly how old he is. He's 31, I've just had a look. So, yeah, he's, you know, you're going to get a good 2 years at the most out of him. So that should be a position where they should be looking at.
28.
Yeah, he's 28. But, you know, if you're 28, you can still get a decent, you know, 3 or 4 years out of a player, at least.
Yeah, they've got Jonjo Kenny.
Oh, I forgot about Jonjo Kenny. Oh, yeah, they should be fine then, if they've got Jonjo Kenny.
Yeah, but he was shit.
Was he?
He was shit.
I didn't really follow him at Schalke, was he?
Well, Schalke as a whole was shit.
I know Schalke as a whole were a bit shy, but what? Was Kenny particularly shy, or was it just because of the environment that he was in?
Probably say it was the environment he was in.
Yeah. Yeah, because at the end of the day, a right back isn't going to be able to propel a team up the table. It's just not that, you know, crucial of a position at the end of the day. Obviously, a good right back can greatly improve a team. You know, look at Liverpool; they're a lot worse without Trent Alexander-Arnold in it. But it's not going to turn a shit team into a good team. A new right back.
What do you mean, Trent Alexander-Arnold is a very good example?
Well, I mean, you know, well, yeah, but put Trent into that Schalke team is my point. And do they, you know, suddenly start pushing for Europe? Like, you know, like, obviously, a good right back can help propel a team and make them better, like Trent does. I mean, we've seen that with Nico Williams. You know, he's just not up to par with Trent. And we saw that in the Community Shield. Aubameyang punished Nico one-on-one. But a good right back isn't the difference between wherever Schalke finished. It was definitely bottom half. And, you know, in tournament with proper good team. That's all I'm saying.
I'm going to check when it finished.
A right back isn't going to propel you 5 or 6 places up, is it?
Well, depends where they finished. I can't remember where they finished. Well, I know they've lost Weston McKennie now, so...
Yeah, he went to Juve, didn't he? Yeah, he went. I won't be surprised to see Aaron Ramsey leave Juventus, to be honest with you. I mean, he barely played last season. And, you know, with the addition of Weston McKennie, they've got a proper... And Arter as well. They've got a proper stacked midfield, the Juventus, along with the likes of Rabiot and Bentancur. So I won't be surprised to see Ramsey leave, and I'm sure there's quite a few Premier League clubs that would be sniffing around. I mean, Arsenal are desperate. They're crying out for a midfielder, so that could be a potential...
And they want Ceballos back online, don't they?
What's that?
They want Ceballos back online.
Yeah. I know Zidane said he was part of his plans, Ceballos, but...
He also said that... Odegaard was part of his plans.
Yeah. I'm not sure how much truth to that there was. I won't be surprised to see Ceballos go back to Arsenal. But anyway, going back to Everton, yeah, I just think that defence doesn't scream top six, top seven for me. And I think that'll end up being the difference.
Well, I don't think they'll stop at those three signings. There's definitely more from them.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
At the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Carlo Ancelotti wouldn't be there if he didn't receive the backing that, you know, a manager of his stature should. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there is a lot more to come. Everton have been known to spend a lot of money.
And their players flop.
Yeah, exactly. The scouting divisions don't tend to be the best at Everton. And yeah, that's the thing, you know. I'm they could go one way or another, Everton. I did originally have Everton as my surprise of the season, but then I just looked at that defence and I thought, you know, can I see them finishing any higher than 8th or 9th? Not really, to be honest with you.
Oh, well, I put them at 6th.
TL.
I want Rafinha, which is Thiago's brother.
What, the centre mid?
Yeah, Rafinha Alcantara.
Yeah. I don't know, I just think, you know, you look at, you know, Leicester and Wolves, you compare those teams to Everton's, you know, and, well, in my opinion at least, there's no competition. Man for man, Wolves and Everton. Wolves and Leicester, sorry, have the better team. And I can't see Everton finishing above either of them, to be honest with you.
So, who's your surprise team?
Well, my surprise team, again, when I say this, I'm not meaning that they are going to break into the top six, but I do think they'll surprise a lot of people in how well they do, is Southampton.
Really?
Yeah, genuinely. I feel like the addition of Salisu from Real, was it Valladolid, yeah. The addition of Salisu, that was a really shrewd bit of business there. Only £10 million for that centre-half. I'm a big fan of Hasenhüttl. He's got those players, you know, really well-drilled and organised and also really intense pressure, you know, that what we saw from him at RB Leipzig. They've gotten rid of people like Cedric, like Højbjerg, like Lamina. Lamina's out on loan, obviously. But they've gotten rid of those sorts of players that, you know, either didn't want to be there or were just dead wood. You know, and bringing in Kyle Walker-Peters, who is still a decent little right back, you know. He's still young, so he's got time to improve. Along with Salisu, there's more signings looking like they're on the way. And yeah, I feel like Southampton are really going to do well. I feel like Che Adams as well. I feel like he's going to hit double figures this season. That's going to be the soundbite from this episode. I feel like towards the end of last season, Che Adams really started to kick on. And I feel like, yeah, it's just... I feel like him and Danny Ings could form a really good partnership up front. Che Adams, you know, for the majority of the season has been very ineffective. But so much just clicked post-lockdown and he's turned into a pretty decent striker, and alongside Danny Ings, who was one goal away from being the top scorer in the division, you know, I feel like that could be a really deadly partnership up front for Southampton. Alex McCarthy as well in goal. Whether they go with McCarthy or Forster, they've got a really good goalkeeper option. Both of which, you know, if it wasn't for Dean Henderson and Nick Pope, would be on the fringes of the England squad. Ryan Bertrand, I rate as a left back. But I think the main cog in the Southampton wheel, you know, you don't need me to point this out because it's pretty obvious to anyone who has eyes, but James Ward-Prowse is a really immense midfielder. Like, I really rate James Ward-Prowse. He's a versatile player. He works hard for the club. And he's better than Højbjerg, in my opinion, 100%. I really rate James Ward-Prowse, and I feel like he's going to have a really good season next season, and he'll definitely be on the fringes, if not solidify his place in the England squad.
What? Why?
Well, I just like what I see from Southampton. They've definitely got the potential to surprise a lot of people and finish, you know, similar to where Sheffield United did this season, you know.
Where did I put? I put Saints at 11th.
Yeah, I feel like Southampton, I'm not going to say they're going to push into the top six or anything, but I feel like they could definitely push to 8th or 9th. And yeah, this is mainly based on Salisu being good and Che Adams actually kicking on and getting double figures. And I feel like both of those are going to happen. I'm a big fan of Hasenhüttl. He gets the best out of young players. He's shown that he's good at nurturing young talent. And yeah, I just feel like Southampton are going to do well.
They've only signed two players, though.
Yeah, but, you know, more's almost certainly going to come. I mean, you know, Højbjerg to Tottenham, that they'll got quite a decent bit of money for Højbjerg. I mean, it was 15 million, yeah. So that
pays... You know, I think it was a swap deal, wasn't it?
Well, Kyle Walker-Peters was involved. I think it was 15 plus Walker-Peters for Højbjerg. So that in itself pays for Salisu, and they've got 5 million left over. You know, add on whatever. What's that?
They must have more than that in the bank.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Add on, you know, 6 million for Harrison Reed, who, you know, I would have kept hold of personally, but add on 6 million for Harrison Reed, who went back to Fulham, plus whatever Arsenal gave them for Cedric.
He was on a free. He was out of contract.
Yeah, but there's almost certainly the majority of clubs have to pay some sort of fee.
I thought it's only when they're under 23 you have to pay compensation.
Oh, well, I could be wrong then. But still, they've got Cedric off the wage bill at the very least. So that's, you know, 15, 16 million that they're basically net off of transfers. So I'm pretty sure we're going to see more deals coming.
Well, where would you... I think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say there's a lot of work. I just feel like, you know, potentially another winger and another midfielder. That's not necessarily a lot of work. I mean, personally, I would have kept hold of Harrison Reed. He really impressed me at Fulham.
The Championship's a lot different.
Well, yeah, of course it is. But you can't just dismiss Championship performances, do you know what I mean? I mean, both Mason Mount and Calvin Phillips have earned England calls up from performances in the Championship. You know, regardless whether you think that's right or wrong, obviously, top brass, you know, rates the Championship. You know, Man United bought a winger from the Championship last season. You can't just completely dismiss Championship performances, you know.
What's the next category?
We'll go to surprise this season for a player. Who you got as your surprise player of the season?
Oh, we're going for surprise player of the season.
Well, we might as well, yeah.
Well, a contender I've gone for is Højbjerg.
All right, go on.
I just think he'll suit the Spurs system, and that midfield. it does need work, and I think he's the guy that's going to sort him out. Lo Celso was really good, but couldn't find the back of the net for whatever reason. Hasn't he gone back? Was he there on loan?
He was there on loan, but there's been a permanent deal sorted out, I think. Right. That had happened in January or in like now, but there was a permanent deal sorted out. He's their player.
Yeah, so I reckon Højbjerg is going to be really instrumental behind Lo Celso, Bergwijn, Son and Kane. And I think if they find a... Maybe if they go 4-5-1, it'll be interesting to see how well him and Ndombele get on.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that Spurs midfield is sort of hinging on whether or not Jose Mourinho can motivate Ndombele. I mean, there's obviously a really talented player in there. We saw that from his days at Lyon. But it just hasn't worked out for one reason or another at Spurs. I don't think Mourinho's quite a big fan of Ndombele. I'm yet to watch All or Nothing, so I'm sure that would shed some light onto the relationship. I don't know. I feel like a midfield of Højbjerg, Lo Celso and a motivated Ndombele would be a pretty good midfield, because I think that would suit Spurs' style of play under Mourinho, which I'm sure next season will be quite gritty, quite nasty, quite typical Mourinho, to be honest with you. I don't think we're going to see, you know, a complete parking of the bus, but I feel like, you know, when you've got a lethal finisher like Harry Kane up front, he's not going to be doing too many, you know, intricate 1-2s. I feel like Spurs are going to be quite a gritty team, hard to break down. Like you say, a switch to a 4-5-1 isn't out of the question. But, you know, I'm just not fully sold on Højbjerg. You know, I mean, he wasn't great at Southampton, but then again, he didn't really fit the system there. You know, he's not the type of player to be high-pressing, you know. Well,
I've got a second choice, and I wanted to go with the more shocking one.
Well, don't let me completely dismiss you. I'm just...
Right, sorry. I was going to go with Bergwijn.
Right.
I'm second with Spurs, I think. I think last season, they were just kind of getting the grips with Mourinho. I think now they've sort of kind of got a system figured out. So I've gone with Bergwijn because after he signed, he was one of the players of the season. Really instrumental with goals, which were heavily reliant on Kane. So hopefully that takes pressure off him. And we'll see them push for top four.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be too sure on that last bit. I am quite a big fan of Bergwijn. I feel like he's a really good player, very quick, very tricky winger. Can play down the middle as well. I feel like he sort of suits. He's in a similar mold of players as, you know, Son and Lucas. Mourinho is obviously a fan of him. He was the first player that he brought in. He was the only player that came in January. And yeah, like you said, he put in some brilliant performances for Spurs. The one that sticks out in my mind was the one against Man City, where, you know, he got the winning goal and he was immense there. I'm not fully sold on Spurs as a team, but in terms of the individual performances, I do think Bergwijn will stand out in that Spurs side.
Okay, who's your pick?
Well, I've already mentioned Che Adams for Southampton. I do think he will get 10 goals, and I stick by that. However, he's not the player I went with. The player I went for is Nicolas Pepe. Obviously, Pepe, he's had a bit of a poor start at Arsenal. Unai Emery refused to pick Aubameyang, Lacazette and Pepe together. And he didn't really fit the system under Unai Emery. However, he has shown flashes of brilliance this season. You know, the goal against Liverpool that was eventually ruled out for offside, you know, it was still an excellent finish from outside of the box. he has shown flashes of being worth that £72 million. And I think under Mikel Arteta, I do think Arsenal will... Well, I'm not going to say a force, but I do think they will be impressive this season, a lot better than they were last season. And Nicolas Pepe, he is a very tricky winger. He is, you know, he does have a fair decent shot on him, a fair decent cross on him. And I feel like with Aubameyang, you know, being more or less locked down at Arsenal, I feel like Nicolas Pepe is going to bag quite a few assists next season. I feel like Mikel Arteta has a lot of faith in Pepe. And yet, I just feel like there's a lot more to come from Pepe. He showed flashes, and I feel like he's going to break out next season and show why he is worth the £72 million that Arsenal paid for him.
I don't see it personally.
Go on.
I feel he's more flash than substance. They've gone back to that Lille well with signing out Gabriel Magalhães. But I don't know. With Lille, signing players like Lille, you're either going to get an Eden Hazard or you're going to get Nicolas Pepe. And I think he only contributed a goal. I could be wrong in saying that.
Pepe did more than that.
Yeah, he did more in Europa League, but he was playing nobodies. And he couldn't even help him out when they were playing a team like Olympiacos, which they eventually went out to. And then he's meant to be going above and beyond these players on the wing, such as Bergwijn, Pulisic, Havertz would probably play on the wing at Chelsea.
Well, I don't think anyone's saying that. Well, I'm sure Arsenal fans are saying that he's better than Bergwijn and Pulisic. But, you know, I just think he's going to have a pretty decent season. I mean, he had 8 goals and 10 assists in 42 games last season. I mean, I know you're questioning the quality of opposition. He had 5 goals and 6 assists in the Premier League. So 11 goal contributions in 31 games in the Premier League, you know. That he is showing flashes of brilliance.
£72 million, though.
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. He's not worth £72 million in this current state. But I feel like the difference between the Pepe that we saw originally sign under Unai Emery and the Pepe that we're seeing now under Mikel Arteta will be completely different, much like a lot of players at Arsenal this season. Don't get me wrong, I don't think Arsenal get top four. I feel like the defence with both Saliba and Gabriel Magalhães, they're going to make mistakes. They're two young centre-halves. And, you know, whether you put David Luiz in that defence or not to sort of shore it up a little bit, get an experienced head in between the two.
Same sentence.
Yeah. Well, no, I feel like if you have David Luiz, you know, he's not the most mobile centre-half. What he's good at is spraying balls forward. And if you have two energetic, quick centre-halves either side of him, they can sort of make up for his mistakes. And David Luiz's, you know, intelligence could make up for the lack of experience from the other two centre-halves. But either way, that isn't a top-four defence, whether you have a back four or a back three. So I don't think Arsenal push on for top four. However, I do think with Aubameyang up top, I feel like Nicholas will see a lot more from Nicolas Pepe this season. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say, oh, he'll have a better season than Pulisic, or he'll have a better season than Bergwijn, or he'll have a better season than Havertz or Ziyech or whatever, you know. But I do think he will have a decent season, Pepe. I feel like we'll see a lot better from him.
I don't see it personally. A defender that you didn't bring up was Socrates, who I've read is going to be going to Napoli.
I mean, considering he's on 6 figures, you know.
Oh my God.
You should probably be looking to shift that on, you know.
Yeah, that's, I didn't know he's on that much. Also, Arsenal are a scummy club because they sack 55 staff members to quote-unquote fund a move for Willian and then go and sign Magalhães for £21 million.
Yeah.
So,
it's not right. It's totally not right. I mean, you're not going to get any argument off me. It is horrible. Anyway, we'll move on to flop of the season. We'll start off with the team again. Which team do you think is going to flop next season, Harry? What team do people have high hopes for that you just don't see?
Leeds United.
Right.
I didn't watch much of the Championship last season, but I think the signings or lack of signings that they've made just don't look like they're going to keep them up. And when you're relying on someone like Patrick Bamford for your goals, that just pretty much sums it up. They also didn't get Ben White because he's now signed a new deal at Brighton. So they went and got Robin Koch, who's decent, but I don't think he's going to be the answer to their defensive issues when they come to the Premier League. And I think Rodrigo, well, I'm kind of spoiling my next category, but I think he's going to be, for 27 million, I think he's going to flop.
Yeah, I mean, you know, £30 million for a 30-year-old striker who scored 7 goals in the league, you know. For context, Ashley Barnes is a 30-year-old striker who scored 6 goals in the league, and he's been injured since November. I mean, I do think there'll be 3 worse teams than Leeds. I don't think Leeds will go down purely because of Marcelo Bielsa. You know, he is a very good manager. You know, he took Leeds from a mid-table Championship club to, by far and away, the best team in the Championship last season.
Yeah, now he's going to take them from the Championship to the Premier League, back to the Championship.
No, I do think there will be 3 worse teams than Leeds. I feel like Rodrigo, whilst I don't think he'll be, the striker that the likes of Sky are trying to paint him as, you know, he's not going to be getting double figures, I don't think. He is an improvement on Patrick Bamford, definitely. And that was a main thing that, you know, Leeds were lacking, you know, was goals from the strikers. And yes, Rodrigo isn't going to get, you know, tons of goals, but I feel like he'll get enough goals. You don't need a double-figure striker to keep you in the Premier League.
Well, you can. You can have a double-figure striker and still go down, i.e. Norwich had Timo Pukki.
Yeah, but it works the other way as well. You don't need a double-figure striker to keep you in the league. I mean, I don't think Brighton had a double-figure striker last season. I think Maupay got 8, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So, you know, you don't need, you know, an 11, 12 goal a season striker to keep you in the league. I feel like I think most Leeds fans are sensible. I feel like the majority of opinions that you're hearing of Leeds that are saying, oh, they're going to push it a top 10 or whatever, are from Sky. They're not from actual Leeds fans. I think the majority of Leeds fans are pretty sensible, have their head screwed on, know that they would be delighted with 17th place. However, I think we can see him being in a sort of similar position to Brighton this season. You know, maybe, you know, for a little bit they're in some danger, but they're never in any serious danger. And at the end of the day, you look back at it, you look back at the season and think, you know, there was definitely worse teams than Leeds. I personally cannot see Leeds getting relegated.
Right. Well, going off of my personal experience with the Leeds owner, he's a bad investor. He bought a company called 11 Sports. They had La Liga and Serie A on it. Then it found out that I don't think he could fund it anymore. And he had to sell the rights, and then La Liga ended up being on ITV.
Mm.
So they might splash big in the summer, and then they're going to be really crap, and then they're going to have to end up selling players in preparation for relegation in January. Because he's known as a bad investor.
And I can't see Leeds being relegated by January, you know.
No, but I think they'll be prepping for...
No, I mean...
I'm not going for them to finish rock bottom, because I think there are two worse teams than them. But I don't think they're as strong as people making out.
Well, I don't think they're as strong as Sky are making out.
Because you're saying, oh, Leeds won it with ease, but so did Norwich, and Norwich were the worst team. Well, they were shocking.
Yeah, but the issue was with Norwich was that they didn't adapt the tactics. You know, Daniel Farke, you know, had never... Well, had he? Is this Daniel Farke's biggest job? I'd never heard of Daniel Farke before the Norwich job.
Yeah, I think... I don't know why. I want to say he was like Dortmund Academy. I may be making it up.
Yeah, I've just looked it up. He did the Dortmund second team. What's that?
I don't know how the hell I pulled that out.
Yeah, he did, genuinely. You know, so he hadn't had experience at the top level of football managing, so he was naive. He didn't adapt his tactics. You know, but I think Marcelo Bielsa is intelligent enough of a manager to know that he'll have to change up. Because that's the difference between Sheffield United and Norwich. You know, on paper, the Sheffield United and Norwich teams weren't that far apart. You know, but the difference was Sheffield United knew they had to change it, their style to, you know, thrive in the Premier League, whereas Norwich thought they could just carry on the way that they were doing. I feel like Marcelo Bielsa, he's managed at the top level, he's managed in the Champions League, and he'll realise that he needs to adapt his style. He's not going to get as many chances in the Premier League, so he can't afford the likes of Bamford to be missing four or five a game. So I feel like he knows that he'll have to adapt it, become more defensively solid. Obviously, with the loss of Ben White, that is a big loss. But Robin Koch is a more than capable centre-half. You know, he gets into the German national team, so he must be doing something right.
Do you mean he's in Brighton?
You what?
He signed a new contract at Brighton.
Ben White did, yeah.
Yeah, so he's not going to be at Leeds.
Yeah, I know.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was on about Robin Koch.
Oh.
I mean, he played for Germany last night, so he must be doing something right to be able to get into that German national team.
Well, he came on as a sub, but yeah.
Well, you know, but there's plenty of good German centre-backs. And, you know, I feel like Marcelo Bielsa is... I feel like he'll be the difference. I feel like if you put Daniel Farke or Dean Smith into that Leeds team, I don't think they stay up. But I feel like Bielsa is intelligent enough of a manager and he's managed at a high level. And I feel like he'll be the difference maker for Leeds next season.
Well, I don't see it. Also, he can't get away with spying in the Premier League.
Yeah.
He's managed a bunch of high-profile clubs, the likes of Bilbao, Marseille, Lazio, Lille, Espanyol, but they've been very brief stints, particularly Lazio and Lille. So he's known to sort of fail in the top divisions, which is another reason I think they'll go down.
Well, I mean, you know, when you have the likes of Pep Guardiola and, you know, Jose speaking highly of him, you know, they don't speak highly of everyone, you know.
Well, he's the biggest accomplishments he's had as a top manager are being runner-up for Bilbao in the Copa del Rey and the Europa League.
Yeah, but, again, you've got to think, you know, are any of those clubs that he's been at, none of them are title challengers. I mean, Marseille, you could argue, you know.
Not anymore.
No, exactly. But none of those teams are going to be winning the league, are they?
No. When he was at Lazio, he was only there for 2 days. What the hell happened
there? Yeah, I think there was something dodgy happening there.
He does well in South America.
Mm.
But yep. That's miles away from the Premier League side.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I personally just think that Leeds will have enough to stay up, personally. I feel like they've got... I just feel like they'll have enough to stay up, personally.
He doesn't have a good record in the top divisions. When he was at Lille, his win record was 26.3%. At Bilbao, even though he came runners-up in two competitions, 38.4%. So, yeah, they might get far in the bloody League Cup or whatever, but that doesn't mean they're going to be doing well in the league. Are we predicting League Cup and FA Cup winner?
Well, we can do it at the end if we've got time. I don't know. I just think Leeds aren't enough to stay up. I'm just going to quickly go over who I think will be flop of the season. To fans of this club, I don't feel like their position will be much of a surprise. But I feel like to outsiders, I feel like they'll probably be disappointed by the season. The club I'm talking about, obviously, is Burnley. I just feel like, it's so frustrating. It is so frustrating. We've lost Jeff Hendrick on a free. We've lost Aaron Lennon on a free. We've lost Joe Hart on a free, which is, meh. Ben Gibson is going out on loan to Norwich. We're going to get £2 million off of Norwich and then another £8 million if they go up. And we're just signing no one. We're not even linked with players. You don't even get any bullshit rumours. We are linked with literally zero players except Joe Worrell, one Nottingham Forest centre-back. It's an absolute joke, honestly. The fact that this chairman, Mike Garlick and Mike Rigg, they are driving away the second greatest manager in the history of Burnley Football Club. They are driving him away because of their refusal to spend money. No Burnley fans are saying, oh, we need to sign players on six-figure wages. No players are saying, oh, we need to go out and spend £50-60 million a season. But their refusal to back Sean Dyche will lead him to leaving. And if Sean Dyche leaves, we are fucked. Now, I don't think we're going to go down this season. I don't think that at all. Because I don't think under Sean Dyche, I don't think we will get relegated. I feel like he's too good of a manager at this point in his career to get relegated. But I don't think we'll be far off, to be honest with you. I think, 14th, 15th, I feel like that could be our position next season. We haven't improved in the squad. In fact, we've gotten worse, whilst teams around us have gotten better and better and better. They're improving constantly. And what are we doing? We're going back. We haven't signed a winger. We haven't signed a central midfielder. We haven't signed a right back. What we have signed is a third choice goalkeeper who will get a grand total of zero appearances for the first team competitively. I can guarantee you that. We haven't even released an away kit. That just sums up how much of a shambles of a club we are.
Wait, who have you signed?
We signed one Will Norris from Wolverhampton Wanderers, who was on loan at Ipswich Town last season. It's an absolute joke, honestly. I'm so frustrated with the way that this club is being run. We're going to drive Sean Dyche away, and then once Sean Dyche leaves, that is it. We are going to finish bottom of the league. I can guarantee you that. We're not going to get relegated this season because Sean Dyche will stay. I'm confident of that. But the board will eventually lead Sean Dyche to leaving Burnley Football Club, and then we will be done. We'll be finished. And honestly, it's so frustrating because every single fan knows where we need to improve. When there's players going for cheap in the Championship, you look at the likes of Brightside Samuel, Ben Pearson, we can pick them up for cheap, for nothing, essentially. But we don't go in for them. We waste time. Look at Matty Cash. We could have easily got Matty Cash if we wanted to. But no, we pissed about, and now we've got Aston Villa.
15 million.
Yeah, but, we could have easily got Matty Cash if we wanted to. Easily. I think we made something like 40 million profit last season as a club. We could have easily gone in for Matty Cash, but we decided not to for whatever reason, because Mike Garlick wants to piss about and Mike Rigg suggests fucking Peter Crouch again, probably. Honestly, it's an absolute joke of a club. In 3 years' time, this club will have five players under the age of 30. Dwight McNeil, Charlie Taylor, Josh Brownhill, Jimmy Dunn, and who's the other one? Oh, Bailey Peacock-Farrell. They're the only players in this squad that are under 27 years of age currently. This squad is old. It's in need of major investment of youth. You know, whether that's promoting people like Max Thompson, like Joel Mbongo, like Anthony Glennon, like Josh Benson, whether it's a case of, you know, injecting those players into the first team, or whether it's a case of buying young players in the market, not the likes of Adam Smith, who we're linked with, a Bournemouth reject, Andrew Sermon, a 34-year-old midfielder who was released from Bournemouth. Where's that going to lead us? Going to lead us straight back down to the Championship. Honestly, I'm just so frustrated with the way that this team's going to play. Like, honestly, it's got me at my wit's end, honestly. Because in 2 or 3 years' time, we will need a major rebuild. Because all our key players will be, you know, old. So it's, honestly...
Like, think you'd end up like Sunderland and Bolton?
I don't think we'll end up like Sunderland and Bolton. Sunderland and Bolton had lots of issues off the pitch, you know, in terms of debts and corrupt owners and stuff like that. I don't think we're going to end up like that, because we have, no matter what I say about the owners and stuff, we have a decent infrastructure, so we're not going to end up getting back-to-back relegations. But I can see us easily, you know, just toiling in Championship, mid-table, mediocrity. I can easily see us doing that when our key players leave, which they inevitably will do, when Sean Dyche inevitably leaves. I can easily see us just toiling away in the Championship.
Do you think McNeil would stay around?
For this season, I think he will. Both him and his dad have said that they are wanting to stay at Burnley. And the club has come out and said that they are confident of James Tarkowski, Nick Pope and Dwight McNeil all remaining at the club. So I don't think we're going to lose any key players this season. I just feel like, you know, we've got rid of Jeff Hendrick and Aaron Lennon, who were two very good squad options, and we've not replaced them. You know, Jeff Hendrick played over 30 games in the Premier League.
What do you mean Aaron Lennon was a good... He's gone to a nobody in Turkey.
He was a good squad option, you know. You bring him off the bench for 20 minutes, and he played all right, you know. And if we got some injuries, you know, Aaron Lennon could have fit into that spot, you know. Because at the end of the day, you know, we've got three wingers now. We've got three wingers, two of which are injury prone, you know.
Yeah, Robbie Brady played good last night.
He played all right last night when he came on. And I do think there is a player in Robbie Brady, but he's never going to get consistent game time with Dwight McNeil on the left-hand side.
Who's your right mid? Goodmanson, isn't it?
We've got Johan Berg Gudmundsson, who, you know, when he plays, he makes a massive difference to that team. Johan Berg Gudmundsson is a very, very good winger, but he's always injured. He's constantly, always injured. You know, he's constantly picking up little niggles. You know, I think he only played like 10 games last season or something like that.
So who are you going to put on the right side then?
Probably Josh Brownhill, because that's who we did before Goodmanson came back and Jack Cork got injured. We'll probably play Cork and Westwood in the middle and Josh Brownhill on the right, because we're stupid like that. And then we'll have one backup winger and no backup centre mids, because we haven't invested in the squad, you know. And then what? You know, we'll play Eric Peters on the wing, you know. It's absolutely ridiculous, the state of this squad, you know, that Sean Dyche is having to play, you know. Sean Dyche is such a good manager, do you know that? He got a, you know, he had a right-hand side of Eric Peters and Sadio Mane. He had a right-hand side of Eric Peters and Phil Bardsley, against Sadio Mane and Andy Robertson, and they marked them out of the game. You know, we got a point at Anfield with Mane against Phil Bardsley. You know, how good of a manager. He's the only manager to get a point at Anfield this season in the Premier League. You know,
Last season, yeah.
And honestly, like, I just don't understand the logic in this club. Surely they realise that investing £30-40 million in players would be a lot less costly than losing £100 million worth of Premier League revenue. Surely they can realise that.
What the hell are they doing with your money?
I don't know. I think what it is because they don't take wages to the board. There's one thing I can't accuse the board of is being greedy, because they're the only board that doesn't take a wage. Mike Garlick earns £0 for running Burnley Football Club. But I think they're just scared. They're scared that, because we're going to get relegated eventually. It's an inevitability. We're a small town. Burnley has 90,000 people living in it. It's got a 20,000-seat stadium. We are not a long-term Premier League club. We're just not. But I think Garlick's scared because he thinks, you know, oh, well, when we go down, I want to have a good reserve of money. But, you know, you can't think like that. You've got to think bigger. You know, you've got to think, well, if I spend a bit of this money, we'll spend more time in the Premier League and we'll earn more money. I think he's just scared to gamble that money. But I don't think he realises that because he's scared to gamble that money, he's driving away the second greatest manager in the history of the club.
Who's your greatest manager?
Harry Potts, who he won us the league, he won us the FA Cup, and he got us to a European, either a quarter final or a semi final. But yeah, like, he's just scared. He doesn't want us to become like a Bolt. I think it's because of the location we're in as well. You know, you look at Bolton, Wigan, Blackburn, all have just dropped like stones all around us, you know, within a few miles of us. So I think he's scared of that happening to us, you know. But
they all had shit owners.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's his view, is that we don't want to spend beyond our means. But we've been a Premier League club for the past 5 years. We've had Europa League football. You know, if he just backed the Daesh, you know, we could potentially be where Wolves and Leicester are if we spent serious money, you know. Like, but he's not gonna. So I don't know why I'm getting so worked up about it, to be honest with you, because he's not a gunner. So, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, it's just, he's not going to change, you know. Sean Dyche is going to leave. We're going to bring in Mark Hughes. Then Mark Hughes will get sacked in, like, March, like, of, you know, the 2021-22 season, because we're bottom of the league. He'll bring in, like, fucking Joey Barton, because Joey Barton knows the club. He's a club legend. He'll bring in Joey Barton. And obviously Joey Barton will be able to keep us up. And then, you know, we'll be in the Championship for the rest of the time. I've just resigned myself to that fact. So, yeah, you know, I'm just going to enjoy the short time left that we have with Sean Dyche.
Why don't you do what Pompey did and have the fans overthrow the owner?
Well, Burnley's a poor community. You know, we don't have any. There's not many Burnley fans that aren't from Burnley. And Burnley is a poor town, you know. But I don't think there'd be many people that could buy Burnley off of Garlick, especially because Garlick says he has no... Garlick says he has no intention of selling because he's a Burnley fan. So, you know.
Have you seen Pompey? Fucking shithole. Particularly Fratton. Fratton is a fucking shithole.
Mm. I mean, the South is your domain, my friend. I mean, I'm sure you'll know all the shitholes.
Yeah.
I know there is one shithole in the south. I think it's called London. That's massive shithole, that. But anyway, we'll move on to the next category before
that's I've worn my brain out. That's it.
Go on.
We've been cancelled, that's it.
Oh, fuck London, it don't matter. We'll move on to another category, the partnership of the season. So, you know, you think about two up front or centre-back pairing or a centre-mid pairing or, you know, a right-back and a right-winger. You know, who do you think is going to be an exciting link-up this season, Harry? I'll go to you. Go on.
Bit of bias, maybe, but Havertz and Werner. Enough said.
All right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, they are two quality players. You know, they'll, you know, easily get into that Chelsea side. Timo Werner, you know, I know there's been talk of playing Timo Werner out on the left wing to accommodate Tammy Abraham, but I don't understand why you'd want to do that. You know, he is a top quality striker. And
none of that is true.
No. I think especially with Havertz coming in.
Play right wing. Pulisic on the left, and then Werner in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens, because, you know, if you play, you know, you could play, for example, Ziyech on the right, Pulisic on the left, Havertz as a 10 behind Werner, But then Mason Mount doesn't fit in, you know.
Yeah, Mount on the left if you want him.
Well, yeah, but then Pulisic is missing out.
You can play on the right.
And then Ziyech is missing out.
Ziyech isn't a right winger. Mm. Why do people think he's playing right wing?
Well, that's where he's mainly been playing on it, Ziyech.
Centre mid. He played 10 games out on the right and played... he played 27 games in the middle.
Oh, so I don't know where you're getting those stats from, because I've got completely different ones here. I've got 20 games out on the right and 13 games down the middle.
Wait, who's your source?
I'm going off of Transfermarkt.
I'm going off of who scored.
Alright.
I wouldn't put Ziyech on the right.
What, I so can't... you put Ziyech as a 10 then? With yeah. Havertz and... Pulisic out wide,
mm-hmm.
and then Mount misses out, Abraham misses out,
yeah.
Hudson-Odoi misses out. You got a lot of young players that are missing out.
Yeah,
they've had tastes of the England squad, you know, international football. So you know they won't want to be sat on the bench at Chelsea. They'll be wanting game time to establish themselves in the England squad.
They're not going to play every game, are they?
Well, they played every game last season, mainly.
I think only Aspi played every game.
Well, not every game then, but a majority of games.
Yeah, but you can't freeze out the players that we've got, the new signings.
Of course you can't. But I'm saying, you know, the likes of Mason Mount and Tammy Abraham will be wanting regular football to get themselves in that England squad.
Yeah, but I'm not picking Mount over Kovacic or Ziyech.
I'm not saying you are, but I'm saying those players could potentially want out of Chelsea if they aren't getting the play time. It'll be interesting to see.
There's definitely space for them.
Well, of course there's space for them as squad players, but it's just whether they want to be squad players or not.
Well, that's not my problem to deal with, so...
that's... that Frank Lampard to deal with, and I'm sure, you know, he'll definitely be making his voice heard. I'm sure he never refrained from that. But as for the Havertz-Werner partnership, yeah, I feel like Werner... I don't feel like he'll come in and score 20 goals this season, but he will be a very consistent goal scorer, I'm sure. And Havertz... The only issue I have with Havertz is, you know... He's not exactly, you know, he's not exactly big. I could see him being bullied off the ball quite easily. If he can find a way to get around that, I'm sure that he would be a very, very good creative source for Chelsea. And going forward, definitely have a lot of options.
But fullbacks nowadays aren't bullies, they're pace merchants.
Well, some are.
Yeah,
not exactly call Phil Bardsley a pace merchant.
No, that's true, but I'm talking like the sort of bigger clubs, sort of like Liverpool have Robertson and they have Trent.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. But I'm just saying, you know, Havertz, you know, could be bullied off the ball. He has the potential for that to happen to him. That's what I'm saying.
That about in Hazard, and he won every single foul. So, you know.
Yeah, I'm not saying Havertz is going to flop. I'm just saying that's one of the possibilities that could happen.
Who's your partnership of the season?
For most of these picks, I tried to go, you know, a tiny bit left field. But for this, I went pretty vanilla. I've gone for Pogba and Bruno. I feel like Manchester United will get top four this season, and I feel like a big part of that will be the link-up play between Pogba and Bruno. Ever since Bruno Fernandes has come in, not only have Manchester United looked 10 times better, but Pogba has looked 10 times better, because the sole creative force in that midfield has not needed to be Paul Pogba. Bruno Fernandes has gotten further forward than Paul Pogba. He's, you know, made quite a lot alongside Paul Pogba, and it's allowed Paul Pogba the freedom. He's not under a rigid system anymore. He's not having to stick to position. He's allowed to free roam like he is in that France team, you know, like that was, he was one of the main driving forces behind France winning that 2018 World Cup, was the fact that he was allowed to spray passes all over the gap. And I feel like Bruno Fernandes gives him that freedom to do that. Again, it might be a case of attitude with Paul Pogba, but I feel like he is definitely a lot more motivated with Bruno Fernandes in that side. And I'm sure with Donny van der Beek coming in, that'll give him quite a bit of competition as well for his role. And yeah, I just feel like that midfield partnership of Bruno and Pogba, alongside, you know, whether it's Nemanja Matic or McTominay, or whether they decide to play Pogba and van der Beek as a double pivot, I don't think they will, but that could potentially be an option. I feel like Pogba and Bruno will definitely set up a lot of goals for Rashford, Martial, and potentially Sancho, potentially Greenwood. You know, I feel like Pogba and Bruno will be a deadly midfield combination this season.
Do you not think Van der Beek's going to fit in the system?
I don't think it's a case of not fitting in the system. I just feel like it's a case of he has Paul Pogba and Bruno Fernandes ahead of him. You know, he's not. They're not going to play. They're not going to play a midfield three of Bruno, Pogba, and Van der Beek, are they?
Yeah.
Really?
Take Matic out of it.
Yeah, but then you have no, you know, solidity in that midfield. You've got three very good midfielders going forward, you know, but you don't have any defensive solidity, and especially when you've got, you know, Maguire and Lindelof sat behind. You know, they're going to need that solidity. They need that Nemanja Matic role. He's been one of the most crucial players since the restart for Man United. I mean, personally, I wouldn't have gone in for Van der Beek. I'd have gone for someone like Lucas Toussaint from Lyon, someone a lot more defensive-minded. Because I can't see a way that Van der Beek displaces Pogba or Bruno unless Pogba, you know, decides to that he's got another brother's wedding to go to. And I can't see him fitting into that Nemanja Matic role. Solskjaer has even come out and said that Van der Beek's best attributes are going forward. So that implies that he's not going to be in that Matic role. So to be honest with you, I can't see him getting into that Man United team. At least not initially, anyway.
Yeah, but then you have Bruno playing deep.
Well, you know, the whole reason that Manchester United got into that top four, the whole reason for the Manchester United resurgence in 2020 was Bruno Fernandes playing that number 10 role. Are you really going to sacrifice Bruno Fernandes playing in that role that's made Manchester United 10 times better for the sake of Van der Beek? Are you really going to uproot everything that made Manchester United tick in 2020?
Yeah, he's going to get a penalty for absolutely anything, and then he's going to score them. So,
well, yeah, but, you know, you're having a go, but if he sits deeper, then you're not going to get that, are you?
Or Pogba sits deeper.
Yeah, I just, you know, I can't see a midfield. I can't see Pogba and Van der Beek working as a double pivot, and I can't see Bruno Fernandes sitting deeper. Yes, he did sit a little bit deeper at Sporting, but that was because he had the freedom to basically roam anywhere he wanted in that Sporting midfield. He doesn't have that at Manchester United because the opponents are of a higher calibre.
I think Pogba's definitely capable of playing CDM.
Well, he's capable of playing as a, you know, a number six, but that's by far not his best role. That definitely limits the talents of Paul Pogba. You know, we saw that under Jose Mourinho. He played Pogba as an older midfielder, you know, and, you know, he was nowhere near as good as he is now.
Isn't he number six at United?
Well, I think he's number six, but he doesn't play that number six role, really. He's more of a number eight.
Do you think United will make any more signings?
To be honest with you, I'm not sure. Do you think the Sancho deal's happening?
No. I'd be...
I mean, the longer it goes on, the less likely it is to happen.
Yeah.
You know, if you asked me 2 weeks ago, I'd have said definitely. Because the same thing happened with the Sancho deal that happened with the Bruno deal, with the Ander Herrera deal, with the Paul Pogba deal. You know, the executives in the club saying there's no way he's not for sale. And then they managed to get a stupid fee. They get the Man United tax added on. But, you know, I can't see it happening now, to be honest with you. But I do feel like Man United will still continue to chase that. And because of that, I don't think they'll bring in any other high calibre players. They might bring in some, you know, £20 million winger on deadline day, but I don't think they'll make any more high calibre signings.
Yeah, they do need squad depth.
Yeah, because as good as Mason Greenwood is, you don't want to be relying on him to start every single game for you.
Well, I was thinking about midfield, because they got buddy Lingard and Mata.
Yeah.
Who else have they got midfield?
Andreas Pereira.
Oh, and they got that, fuck, what's his name? The Scottish lad.
Oh, James Garner.
No.
McTominay.
Yes.
And Fred as well.
Fucking hell, I forgot about him.
Well, I mean, Fred and McTominay have both played alright this season, to be fair.
I rate McTominay, not Fred. Fred's...
Well, he had a good three months, did Fred, before Bruno came in. You know, obviously he's not, you know, good enough to be, you know, a starter for Manchester United. But I feel like as a squad player, Fred's all right. You know, don't get me wrong, £60 million for Fred, a squad player, you know, that's not a good deal. But I feel like in terms of the player itself, he's good enough to be a squad player at Manchester United, definitely.
I don't think he's going to have much of a shout now.
No. Well, it all depends how Van der Beek is deployed. You know, from the sounds of it, he's either going to be deployed in the Paul Pogba role, you know, as a number 8, or he's going to be a number 10 from Solskjaer's comments. So it all depends how Van der Beek's deployed. If he's deployed in that Paul Pogba role, then Fred doesn't really have much of an option. But he's a more than good enough backup to Pogba, I'd say.
What's the next category?
I've just realised we completely skipped flop of the season for a player. I completely realised we skipped that.
Oh, okay.
So we'll go back to that. Go on. Who do you have?
Well, I alluded to it earlier. Rodrigo. I think he's going to have 5 or 6 goals. And that's your lot. Because I think... Well, I said it earlier, I think Leeds are going down. And when I'm thinking a player like Rodrigo's going to flop, and then Bamford's already been proven to be really crap in the Premier League, they are really going to struggle for goals. And then you have a player like Pablo Hernandez, who's ancient. Yeah, they're in big trouble.
I mean, you know, I don't mean to retread on old ground here. You know, Rodrigo isn't going to get double figures. You know, I'm pretty confident of that. However, you know, you don't really need a double figure striker to stay in the Premier League. I mean, you know, there are teams that have had double figures and got relegated. And yet, for £30 million, you know, I don't think he is worth that at all. So if that's what your definition of a flop is, then yeah, I can totally see that. But I don't think it'll be, you know, as bad as you make out. I can see, you know, 7 or 8 goals, you know.
Yeah, but that's awful.
Well, for £30 million it is, but
yeah.
For a team that's fighting relegation, it's not awful.
Then don't pay £30 million for a player like that.
Well, no, I agree. I agree with you there. I wouldn't pay £30 million for 30-year-old Rodrigo. However, you know, and if that's what your definition of a flop is, you know, if he's not going to be worth that £30 million, of course he's not going to be worth that £30 million. I 100% agree with you there. But I don't think he's going to be awful. That's all I'm saying.
I don't understand how you think 7 or 8 goals as a striker doesn't constitute to being awful.
Well, you know, maybe 7 or 8 goals for a top 4 team is awful. But, you know, 7 or 8 goals for a team that's, you know, fighting for relegation, you know, you got to think back to last season. You know, Neil Maupay, I think he got 9 goals at the end of the season. You know.
Brian didn't go down.
I wouldn't have said he was awful.
No, but they did have goals from elsewhere.
Exactly.
But I don't think Leeds are going to have that.
Well, I mean, they have done in the Championship. Yeah. I know the Championship's a different beast, but, yeah.
Who was their top scorer aside from Bamford?
I would not be able to tell you.
Sorry about
that. You know, but you look at, you know, Aston Villa got 41 goals. You know, Brighton got 39 goals. You know, Crystal Palace got 31 goals, and they were more than comfortable. You know, if Rodrigo goes into that Crystal Palace team and gets 8 goals, that's a quarter of the goals that Crystal Palace got. You know,
well,
so for a team that's fighting relegation, that isn't awful.
Speaking of the ancient player, their next top scorer was Pablo Hernandez. He got 9. They played 46 games and only got 69 goals. Yeah. The next top scorer was Jack Harrison. Have they lost any players?
I don't think so. Meslier and Harrison have gone back on loan. Well, Meslier's on a permanent. I think it's just Ben White who they've lost.
He got a goal and 2 assists. They've also lost Eddie Nketiah, who got 3 goals.
Well, yeah, but he went in January, and
yeah, he did.
Bielsa basically never picked him.
He played 17 times. Yeah.
Yeah, but most of them will have been off the bench.
Yeah. They had that player players like Jack Clark, didn't score. I don't know who that is. They had
Didn't Jack Clark? I swear he was only there for half a season on loan, and he barely played. He was on loan from Spurs.
Yeah, he played 1 game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All their top scorers played loads of games. Just looking at these goals, I just don't see it. I just don't see them staying up.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think it will be tight.
They only had 6 penalties last season, so that's not going to help them if they're lacking in the goals department, that they're going to rely on penalty kicks.
Well, that's a good thing, that they're not having to rely on penalties, you know.
True. They averaged 1.5 goals a game.
Yeah, that was mainly because they'd go 1-0 up and just shut up shop.
Yeah, you can't do that in the Prem.
Well, you can. What we do.
Yeah, you can if you're a team like Liverpool, which we saw them go on loads of 1-0, you know, wins. Or a team like Burnley, which is just very defensively adept. You can't when you're a team like Leeds and you're just coming up, because,
Anyway, I think we've talked about Leeds enough. I feel like I might shock you with my flop of the season for a player. I've gone for Dean Henderson.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say. Go on.
I said I hope you're right, because I don't like Man United. I like him, but...
Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say that Dean Henderson will not be starting the Premier League season. I think Solskjaer is a big fan of David De Gea, as was proven when he called him the best goalkeeper in the world.
Well, he was brilliant last night, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. And he does show flashes. I mean, personally, I do think Henderson should be starting over him anyway. But he's not a bad keeper by any stretch of the imagination. But I feel like it will take a stretch of 7 or 8 bad games for De Gea to be dropped by Solskjaer. I don't think he's that kind of manager who, if a player has 2 or 3 poor games, then he's straight out of the team. Especially someone like De Gea, who he praised very heavily last season. I feel like Dean Henderson won't get the chances that he got at Sheffield United. I think he's more than capable enough. But, you know, I can't see him making many appearances outside the Champions League and the Cups.
Yeah, but if that's the case, I don't understand why he didn't go back out on loan then.
Well, I think Henderson feels that he's more than good enough, you know, which I'd say he is, to start. And I feel like there must be something that made Henderson think that he will start.
Well, I read Romero's going to Everton.
Romero's off, yeah.
Yeah.
So
he's back. He might play the cup games then.
That's what I mean. You know, Henderson, you know, he was one of the best keepers in the division last season. You know, he earned his spot in the England squad. You know, can I see him, you know, playing well in the Champions League and the FA Cup and the League Cup for Manchester United? Yeah, of course I can. He's a brilliant goalkeeper. But I can't see him replacing David De Gea purely because Solskjaer seems to have a lot of loyalty to players. And I don't think De Gea is going to go on a bad run of 7 or 8 games. I just think, like this season, he's, you know, just going to be a pretty average keeper who has a couple of mistakes in him. So I don't think Solskjaer's going to drop him.
I don't think that's fair to call him a flop then. If he's not being given the opportunities, then I don't think it's fair to, you know, rate him with the other signings.
Well, what I meant by a flop was, you know, someone who the majority of fans have high expectations for, who, you know, will not deliver next season. And I feel like that will fit Dean Henderson down to a T. I'm not saying it'll be Dean Henderson's fault. You know, I'm sure he'll play well when he plays. I just don't feel like he'll be able to displace David De Gea.
Yeah, but if that's the managerial decision, then it's not on the player. I don't think it's fair to label him a flop if he's not being given the chances when he's not allowed to prove whether he's better than De Gea or not.
No. Well, it all depends what you class as a flop, you know.
A player who...
Under your definition, he isn't a flop. But I feel like if, you know, what I classed as a flop was, you know, someone who, you know, the expectations upon them will be a lot higher than the level at which they deliver.
Yeah, but if Henderson's not allowed to deliver, then I don't think it's fair.
Well, no, I'm not saying, you know, that, you know, it's down to Henderson. Of course it's not down to Henderson. But I just don't feel like, because people are expecting him to walk in and just claim that number one jersey at Man United and then claim the number one jersey for England, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. That's all I'm saying.
Who's your second choice?
I also, you know, I originally also went for Donny van de Beek because I don't think he'll get chances either, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that doesn't fit my definition of a flop.
Yeah. Well, I mean, under your definition, I'm just trying to think of some, you know, big money signings then off the top of my head that came in. I don't think that William Saliba will do as well as some Arsenal fans seem to think. I feel like, you know, he's only a 19-year-old kid.
You think he's going to start?
Well, it all depends on the system. I think he will. I think he'll start. And I think he'll make quite a few mistakes, and that'll get Arsenal fans right on Saliba's back. I don't think he's a bad player. He has the potential to be a very good player. But I feel like, you know, people expect him to be a generational talent. He's not that.
So you don't think someone like... wow, there isn't... Well, you don't think like someone like Eberechi Eze or...
I think Eberechi Eze is going to do really well for Crystal Palace.
I'm trying to see if there's any other big signings. Harold Acosta, 18 million to Wolves.
Well, to be honest with you, I don't think he'd play Harold Acosta. I mean, you know, I mean, he was on loan at Leeds last season. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he sounded like he'll be all that, to be honest with you.
Nathan Ake, Ferran.
Yeah, actually, Nathan Ake. I don't think Nathan Ake is any better than John Stones, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I agree. Aaron Ramsdale at Sheffield United?
I think he'll do pretty well, Aaron Ramsdale, actually. I don't think he'll do as well as Dean Henderson, because he's not as good a keeper as Dean Henderson, but I do think he'll do quite well.
Oh, wow, you're right.
He really impressed me with his performances at Bournemouth, you know, and when he has a better defence in front of him, I'm sure he'll perform quite well.
Doherty?
I'm unsure about Doherty. He's very much in the mould of someone like an Aurier. You know, he's very good going forward, but going but defensively, he's not the best. So,
Well, it says Lo Celso signs for $32 million. Jesus.
Anyway, I've got to move on. Who do you think, Harry? I've got a feeling we'll have similar picks here. Who do you think will be the first manager sacked? And
are we not doing bargain player then?
Oh, well, we can do that. Go on then.
Who's your one?
My one. For this, I don't think we'll have similar players then. For this one, I've actually gone a little bit left field. I've gone for Joel Veltman to Brighton. But 800,000. I know Brighton have quite a few good defenders, but for £800,000, you know, Joel Veltman, who played for Ajax, is a really good defender. I feel like he'll definitely add a lot of experience to that young Brighton back line. And I feel like both on the pitch and off the pitch, he'll be a very calm head. He'll be, you know, very relaxed defending. And I feel like for 800k, he'll be an absolute bargain for Brighton.
Fair enough. I've gone with the cop-out answer, Thiago Silva.
He's just going to make an absolute world of difference in that Chelsea back line. You know, the likes of, you know, Tomori and Christensen, you know, you could tell they were lacking that calming head. You know, Aspilicueta wasn't that. And Thiago Silva, you know, league winner. Did he win the Champions League with AC Milan? Or am I making that up?
Yeah.
It was after then, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. But still, he's been at that very top level, you know, where Tomori and Christensen haven't. And he'll definitely make a world of difference to those two centre-halves.
I guess my next pick, if I'm going to sit with cop-out answers, would be Adam Lallana at Brighton.
Yeah, he was someone else who was on my radar. I'm a big fan of Lallana. I would have liked to have had him at Burnley if it wasn't for the wages that Lallana is reportedly on. But, you know, he is definitely a very good midfielder. If he can stay fit, I feel like that's the main caveat with Adam Lallana. If he can stay fit, he's a very good midfielder and definitely will improve that Brighton team, especially with Aaron Moy leaving.
Oh, yeah. Where's he gone?
He went somewhere in the Middle East. I can't remember where.
Let's have a look. Brighton. Oh, no, he's gone to Shanghai.
Oh, right.
And they got some money from 4.5 million.
Yeah.
That's quite a big loss for them.
Yeah.
And Glenn Murray's gone to Watford on loan.
Yeah, he went to Watford on loan.
They also went... Shane Duffy's gone to...
Not Celtic, aren't they?
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah, well, he is Irish, and he is probably very low in the pecking order at this point in terms of centre-halves at Brighton. So
fair enough. Who have we gone with in terms of first manager?
Well, I went for Dean Smith, to be honest with you. I feel like he was definitely on the cusp of getting sacked last season. He survived by the skin of his teeth. And I don't think Villa will be as fortunate next season. I feel like Dean Smith will be gone by Christmas, probably. And I feel like his replacement... I feel like the first Premier League team to sack the manager will have a good chance of bringing in this guy anyway. Is Eddie Howe. I don't think he's been linked with any job, to be honest with you, on a, you know, serious basis. But you'd think he would have a club lined up to go to. But that hasn't happened yet. Palace and West Ham, neither of them have gotten rid of Hodgson or Moyes, which you would have thought would have been the two most obvious ones. So they're obviously wanting to stick with both of them. And I feel like Villa would be a good next step for Eddie Howe.
Yeah.
What have you gone with?
Dean Smith, but I went Nigel Pearson.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
He did impress me, Nigel Pearson, for Watford. I know a lot of Watford fans weren't keen on him, but he definitely showed a lot more than when Watford were under Gracia and Kike Sanchez-Flores. He got a 3-0 win against Liverpool. You know, like, that's, you know, no other club, well, Man City can actually, but apart from Man City, no other club can claim that, and they can be the club that can claim to be the first that beat them in the league. I feel like Pearson is a good manager. I feel like he was probably a bit harshly let go at Watford, but not only Watford, at Leicester before him as well. Obviously, it worked out for Leicester. But, yeah, I do feel like he's good enough to have another Premier League job, another crack at the Premier League. Villa could be a potential place for him. I just feel like Eddie Howe is more likely to be gone for than Nigel Pearson.
Fair enough. The next category is predicted table, isn't it? Or, you know, sort of your winner, top four, Europe and relegation, isn't it?
Yeah, I just thought, to end off with, we just thought the main headline. I'm not going to ask you to predict the whole table, just who's going to get relegated, who's going to get Europe, who's going to get top four, and who's going to win the league. So we'll start with relegation. You've already said you think Leeds will go down, but who else do you think will go down?
I reckon Fulham are going to be rock bottom and Villa.
Mm.
Who have you gone with?
I've also gone for Fulham and Villa, but I went for West Brom instead of Leeds. I feel like Villa got very lucky. You know, if it wasn't for goal line technology not being on in the first game back, they wouldn't be in the Premier League. They survived by the thinnest margin. And I don't feel like they'll be so lucky next time round. I do like the addition of Matty Cash. I feel like he's a good player, but I don't feel like that'll be enough, personally. West Brom,
I've gone for them to finish above your club, so...
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not sure about West Brom. They could go one or two ways. Keeping Matias Pereira, that was a big, big deal, because he was their main creative outlet for West Brom. He was their star player in the Championship. But I just feel like they need more West Brom. I can't see this West Brom team staying up at the very least. And Fulham, yeah, you know, they are a decent team, Fulham. And they have bought well. Bringing back Harrison Reed was a very astute bit of business. Anthony Robertson, a very good left-back from Wigan. And Mario Lemina is a decent little midfielder. You've got players like Alexander Mitrovic up front, who is a decent forward. But I just can't see him staying up, personally, because I don't think Scott Parker is a good enough manager to keep him up. I feel like he's very inexperienced in the Premier League. I think he only had like 5 games or something in the Premier League last time out. Really, Fulham should have finished a lot better with the team that they had in the Championship. I can't see Fulham surviving, to be honest with you. Well, we'll go for Europe next. Who do you think will qualify for Europe? And when I say Europe, I mean Europa League. I don't mean top four.
Well, I think they're doing the UBL 2, aren't they?
I thought I was coming in, not this season, but the season after. That was when it was starting.
Ah, okay. In that case, I've gone with Leicester, Everton and Spurs.
You've surprised me there. I just can't see Everton getting it. I mean, Spurs potentially could, but I just can't see Everton getting Europa League. You know, I mean, every season people predict Everton to get Europa League, and I just don't feel like they will do. It's just that defence. That defence is just a gaping hole.
I don't think they're done in terms of business. So if they recruit right, I think that's absolutely possible. I'm not particularly confident in them. I think the other two are definitely I'm more confident in, but I can't. The other team would be Wolves. I'd go with. I've put Arsenal to finish ninth.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be doing that well.
No. Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like Arsenal... Well, personally, I've gone for Wolves, Arsenal and Leicester to get Europa League. You know, the same as this season, to be honest with you. Very boring, I know. But, you know, I just feel like Arsenal are definitely going to be a lot better this season than they were last season. The difference that Arteta has shown from Unai Emery, had he been there all of last season, they would have been pushing right there with Leicester for the top four. You know, and I feel like Arsenal, I don't feel like they're going to get top four, mainly because of that defence. But I do think they will be far better than they were last season. And I feel like the under Arteta, they definitely have a good thing going. They've got a decent group of young players, you know, like Saka, Martinelli, Maitland-Niles, Gabriel Magalhaes, William Saliba. They've got Joe Willock as well, you know, so they've got a good young core of players, along with, you know, your experienced heads like your Xhakas, Lacazettes, Aubameyangs, Lenos, etc. So I feel like that team will definitely be good enough to get Europa League. And Wolves, yeah, I just feel like, especially because they don't have Europe this season, they're going to be focusing exclusively on the league. I feel like, yeah, I just feel like they're getting it.
Nice. Where have you gone for Arsenal to finish?
I think Arsenal are going to finish sixth, to be honest with you. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they will be, you know, pushing top four, but they'll be in a similar sort of position to Wolves and Leicester.
What's the next?
What have you got finishing in the top four but not winning the league?
So, in order from second, third and fourth, I've gone Man City, Chelsea, Man United. What have you gone?
Well, I've gone for Man United fourth.
Yeah.
Chelsea, wait.
Have you done the same as me, then?
Chelsea third and Liverpool second.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I feel like Man City are going to spend a lot more money. And I just feel like Liverpool don't have the best depth up front, especially. You know, you think if Salah gets injured or if Mane gets injured, you know, they're relying on someone like Minamino or Shaqiri or Origi to come in.
Harvey Elliott,
yeah. I mean, they were lucky to an extent, Liverpool, that Salah and Mane aren't going this season, off to AFCON for about 2 months in the middle of the season, but that's happening in 2021, so, you know. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to, you know, I just feel like Man City are going to spend a lot. I feel like Chelsea...
I don't get that. How do you get away with, from the skin of your teeth, with the financial fair play, and then go and spend hundreds of millions?
Well, I'm sure... I mean, I don't know anything, but I'm sure that there was some under-the-table actions, I'll say, happening going on there. And I feel like if Chelsea bought a goalkeeper, I would definitely be predicting them to win the league, genuinely.
Apparently we're in for Edouard Mendy from Rennes.
Yeah. Well, when I say a keeper, I mean, like, a proper, experienced, decent keeper. Like, I mean, how old is Mendy? He's still young, isn't he, for a keeper?
What the hell? Did my did my laptop like hear that? I just put E and then it knew what I was comparing. He's 28 years old.
All right. Well, shows what I know then.
Senegalese.
Yeah, I mean, how much have you seen of him? Because I've not seen much of him.
He plays for Rennes. That's promising. We were going to get Mike Dan from Lille, but that doesn't look like it's going to happen.
No.
So in 63 games, Mendy has kept 23 clean sheets.
I'm not a fan of... well, I am a fan of clean sheet statistics, but they don't tell the full story. Well, because, you know,
63 games, conceded 62.
Yeah. So, you know, like, that I don't feel like that tells the full picture because, like you say, he plays for Rennes. So, you know, like, it's not like he plays for PSG and got that, you know. Like, if you went off clean sheets, then, you know, pissing, you know, I don't know. I can't think of a good example, but, you know, a goalkeeper in a good team is always going to have, or 99% of the time, is going to have better clean sheet stats than a player in a poor league, in a poor team.
Well, I'm just going to look at him compared to other players. He finished 7th in terms of, in 37.5% of games that he played, ended in a clean sheet.
Right.
Keylor Navas was 4th. 52.4% of his games were clean sheets. The top keepers were Mike Nan, who was linked. He had 12. Mandanda had 12. And Rijkovic, who plays for Stade Reims, had 12 as well. The thing was, I think PSG were rotating their keepers.
Yeah.
Areola, they had, what's his face, Navas. They had Bulka, and then they had Sergio Rico.
Yeah, and I mean, clean sheet stats, you know, like you say there, according to them, you know, Mandanda is the joint best keeper in the league, and he was absolutely god-awful at Crystal Palace, so, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
They don't tell the full story. I mean, you know, if Chelsea got someone like Jan Oblak, I'd be backing him in the Champions League, never mind the Premier League, you know.
Yeah. Best keeper in the world, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, 100%. But, yeah. And did you say you wanted to predict the Cups as well?
Well, I've gone for League Cup to go to Liverpool, FA Cup to go to Chelsea. I think we're going to get revenge.
Yeah. I mean, I won't be surprised if Chelsea don't get a trophy this season. I feel like that'll be definitely something that Frank Lampard aims for. You know, that'd stroke his ego. But, yeah, I do feel like, you know, I'd be surprised if Man City didn't win the League Cup, especially considering they've won the last 12 or something.
We might get a Liverpool-Man City final, which would be good.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the draw. Yeah. I don't like predicting, you know, individual rounds and stuff like that. Predicting finals and stuff because the draw could happen. You know, it's literally a random draw. So, what would happen?
Yeah.
You know, Liverpool and Man City could come up against each other in the third round. You know.
Yeah. Well, isn't it, I think there's EFL Cup on today, isn't there?
I believe so. Yes. Because I know the draw for the second round happens on Sunday, and that's where all the Premier League teams that aren't in Europe go into it. Because that'll be our first game of the season, will a League Cup game, because the games against Man United was postponed.
Yeah.
So for us and Villa, our first games will be in the League Cup.
And I'm assuming people can work out what we've put as our winners of the league.
Yeah, yeah.
Which we differ.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, it just goes down to the issue of depth for Liverpool. They definitely did a good thing in signing Kostas Milas at left back because Andy Robertson, you know, his backup was James Milner and he's gone. So, you know, they definitely need another left back. But I feel like they could definitely do with another winger and another centre back as well. Since Dejan Lovren has left, they've only really got three centre backs.
Are Liverpool broke or something?
Well, I know FSG have told Klopp basically they have to sell to in order to buy.
What?
I know, I think that's daft. But, you know, even if they had to, you know, you've got players like Shaqiri and Harry Wilson, you know, on your books who you could get, you know, 20 million for both of them. And for that, you can bring in a decent player. So, you know.
Would you play that Ben Woodburn if push came to shove?
I mean,
I rate a player like Curtis Jones coming in.
Yeah, I feel like Jones will be more likely than Ben Woodburn. I haven't really heard much about him and his loan move at Oxford. You know, there wasn't really much hype around Ben Woodburn. I feel like Rian Brewster will get a lot of minutes this season.
Oh, I don't rate him. I hate him. He's just so ego.
Well, he's no Harvey Elliott, you know.
No.
And I felt bad for him because, you know, at the Community Shield, because, you know, you're telling an 18-year-old to take the third penalty in a shootout, you know.
You can say no.
You what?
You can say no.
Yeah, I know he can say no, but, you know, if no one's stepping up and they ask you, you know, what?
Yeah, I don't want to take it. Can I go sixth or seventh?
I felt bad for him anyway.
No, I bet he was right up for it.
And you're basing that off the 1-4 we took with his Champions League medal.
Yeah, I just don't like him for it. Yeah. I just think he's cocky. Just even when he's at Swansea, he thinks he's like God's gift. And
well, I mean, he's an 18-year-old kid who's earning, you know, like 30 grand a week. You know, he's obviously going to have some ego, isn't he?
Yeah, Harvey Elliott's 16, 17.
Oh, Harvey Elliott's way worse than Rian Brewster.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Harvey Elliott's far worse.
Okay.
Yeah, Harvey Elliott's a knob.
Is Mbappe like that? Like, he is on the pitch, but, like, off the pitch, he seems alright.
Yeah.
I suppose on the pitch, you can actually prove well, he is one of the best players in the world. I mean, kind of hard not to be. Anything else we need to cover?
No, I think that's it.
That's it.
I can't think of what else. Well, that's it for us, likely until the season starts. You can follow the podcast at AntiFootballPod. And that is it from us, and we'll speak to you next time.